Shripashtaya Bhutaleshi Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namani Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nivasesha Sinyavadi Paskutyade Sitarani Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Samsajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vidamscha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. It's August 31st, 2013, in Hilo, Hawaii, class over Skype, on Bhagavad Gita, chapter 12, text 13 through 20. Here we're going to be looking at the qualities of the bhakta who has attained peace. So, as you may recall, earlier in chapter 12, Krishna was talking about the best process being Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti, that is constant absorption of the mind and intelligence in Him. And those who were not able to do that were supposed to perform Abhyas Yoga, what we normally call Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, where one's engaging one's body in activities of devotion while making an effort to fix the mind on Krishna, by bringing the mind back to fix it on Krishna. So in order to engage in sadhana bhakti, one has to have a peaceful mind. It's not possible to practice fixing the mind on Krishna, what to speak of fixing the mind on Krishna, unless your mind is peaceful. If your mind's running here and there, how are you going to do that? So then we talked about the direct and the indirect path, which is what started this whole chapter, Arjuna asking which was better, the direct or the indirect path. The direct path is you start with bhakti itself, performing the activities of bhakti, at least externally, with the mood that Krishna is the boss, Krishna is the proprietor, and the mood that only attaining Goloka Vrindavan is the goal of life. Then there's the indirect path, by which first you have to qualify yourself by being pious and engaging in varnashram. Then you do karma yoga. You do detached work, where you surrender the fruits to the self or to Brahman, which then qualifies you to do Gyan Yoga, where you study philosophy. You basically give up ordinary work, which qualifies you to do Dhyan Yoga, where you're engaged in meditation, which allows you to realize the self and God. Now, either way, you attain peace. Either going through the yoga ladder step by step or performing the external limbs of bhakti, you attain peace. And that peace allows you to perform Abhyas Bhakti Yoga, which is the bridge to Raghunuga Bhakti. Now this peace, as I hear Prabhupada saying in his purport to 12, 13, 14, all these qualities enable him to fix his mind and intelligence entirely on the Supreme Lord. So here again, Srila Prabhupada is explaining why Krishna is discussing these qualities in this chapter. He said, such a standard of devotional service is undoubtedly very rare, but a devotee becomes situated in that stage by following the regulative principles of devotional service. So we shouldn't be discouraged by this rarity, which Krishna has explained also in the 7th chapter, Manushinam Sahasresu Kaschidyarati Siddhaya Yatitamapi Siddhanam Kaschin Mambeti Tatvataha. Out of thousands of people, one is interested in perfection, and of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. I mean, if we look at the population of the earth, 6-7 billion people, and then we look at those who are interested in bhakti, we'll see we're already in the rare category. So this is the bridge to Abhyas Yoga. Again, as Prabhupada says, all the qualities of peace enable him to fix his mind and intelligence entirely on the Supreme Lord. So how one gets from externally following to internally fixing one's mind on Krishna, you know, people ask this question all the time, all over the world. How do I get to the point where I fix my mind on Krishna? One's got to develop these qualities of peace. Now, let's look at the relationship of peace to these specific qualities, because we're going to be listing here a number of amazing qualities. And these qualities come from peace, and they're the manifestations of peace. Shall we say, if you want to say, what's peace? What is it made out of? You know, what's the ingredients in this cake? So you got your peace cake, and these are the ingredients that make it up. And why is that? And that is because you can't really have these qualities until you have peace. The opposite of peace, of course, is fear. And fear is what causes us not to fully have good qualities. So if you think about it for a minute, you know, I'm sure everybody listening considers himself basically an honest person. But would we say we're completely honest? Are we honest in all circumstances? And very few people would say, yes, I'm honest in all circumstances. So if we think about what are the circumstances in which we are less than honest, and those are always circumstances in which we're afraid. We're thinking, oh, if I'm honest in this circumstance, then I won't get something that I need. The same is kindness and respect. Amani na mani dena kirtaniya sadahari. One's supposed to deal with respect towards all living entities. And we might say, oh yeah, I'm a respectful person. But are we always respectful? Are there times that we deal with people with disrespect, without consideration, even doing and saying things that are mean? And when does that happen? The other night we were coming back from the Vyasa Puja program. We were coming back in two vehicles, so my four-year-old granddaughter wanted to go with her mother. But her mother was leaving a little later, we were going a little earlier. And she was screaming, just screaming. And I said, you know, when you're screaming, you disturb everybody else. She said, I don't care. I don't care if I'm bothering everybody else. I want to go with my mother. So normally she does care if she's disturbing everybody else. Normally she does care about how other people feel. But when she was scared, I'm not going to get what I want, then all of her respect and consideration was finished. And you can say, well, that only happens when we're a child. No, it doesn't. It happens between husband and wife, between parents and children, between brother and brother, between employee and employer, and so forth and so on. When there's something we really, really, really want, we think we really need it, and we're afraid that we're not going to get it or we're going to lose it if we already have it, then we give up our good qualities. So it's only when we have no fear, when we have full courage. Some synonyms for peace would be courage and faith. And if we have full peace, full courage, full faith, then there's no tipping point. There's no point at which we abandon the kind of person we want to be. So I think this is such an important thing to understand, because all of us have this idealized person that we'd like to be. The reason we have that is because ultimately that's who we are. As a soul, we have most of the qualities of God. And we have those qualities. Those are actually our qualities. It's not something external to us. It's our own intrinsic nature. So naturally, we're always striving to realize and be our own real self. But the only way to do that is to have peace. So here Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, what is the description of the devotee who has attained such peace? In response to this question, the different nature of many types of devotees are described in 8 verses. So these are internal qualities and external behaviors. Because if we say, well, what is peace? What is peace, courage, faith? What is that? What does it mean? It's so vague. You know, it's like when we say, oh, you should be humble. Well, what does that look like? And what does that feel like? What would I do? So if we say, here's a person who is completely peaceful. They don't have fear. Abhaya charanaravindare. They don't have any fear. They have full trust, full courage. What is it made out of? So that's the description here. Now, one may ask, well, if I perform the external activities of bhakti, or if I go through the yoga ladder, will these qualities just manifest? Yes, they will. But also, the bhakta works to develop these qualities as part of doing bhakti. Remember, we were describing that even in just doing the external activities of bhakti, Krishna Karmani, that one had to have the concept that Krishna is the proprietor. So even the external activities of bhakti requires a certain mindset. Now, we can compare this to the fact that Srila Prabhupada often says a devotee is automatically a vegetarian. A devotee doesn't have to join a vegetarian society. But that doesn't mean that the devotee doesn't make any effort to be a vegetarian. When you go shopping, you look at the things you buy, you're making some effort. So in a similar way, all these qualities naturally arise as part of bhakti, but at the same time, as part of bhakti, you have to make some effort. In other words, you don't have to do something outside of bhakti. You don't have to join some, you know, good quality, the Association for Development of Good Qualities and Peace. That there are such associations and groups. One doesn't have to separately join such a group, but one does have to make an endeavor to develop these qualities. So we're going to look at categories of these qualities. Why don't we first read through just the English of these verses. So if you have a Bhagavad Gita, you can turn to the verses, and we're going to go through so this is again 13 through 20. One who is not envious but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me, such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. He for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. My devotee who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. One who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, who is fixed in knowledge, and who is engaged in devotional service, such a person is very dear to me. Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me. So in discussing these verses, instead of going through them verse by verse, I've taken them and recategorized them into four categories. And we put this with the acronym DEAR, because all of these categories make us very dear to Krishna. Now, the fact that they're dear, that they make us dear to Krishna, is also extremely significant, because bhakti is not a mechanical process. So it's not that one undergoes a mechanical process, attains peace of mind, and then can fix one mind on Krishna. That's true, but it's also that by attaining these qualities of peace, Krishna becomes very pleased, and Krishna gives the ability to fix our mind upon him. So it's this peace and this ability to fix one's mind is also bestowed by grace. It's not simply you've pushed the right buttons. So for D, we're going to have detachment above duality. Under E, endeavor and focus. A, attitude of a servant of God. R, relationship interaction. So that's D-E-A-R, D, detachment above duality. E, endeavor and focus. A, attitude of a servant of God. R, relationship interaction. So first we're going to look at D, detachment above duality. Krishna gives a list of things that the devotee becomes unaffected by. Happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, auspicious, inauspicious things, joy and grief, desire and lamentation, honor and dishonor, fame and infamy, heat and cold, bodily pain and bodily pleasure. So we have a number of these that are, happy feelings, happiness and distress, joy, grief, bodily pain and bodily pleasure. So when things are going nicely for our body and our mind, and where things aren't going nicely for our body and our mind. So to remember that this is just the body and the mind. As Krishna says later in the 14th chapter, one who does not hate illumination, attachment, or delusion when they appear, or long for them when they disappear. So generally, when we're feeling happiness, joy, bodily pleasure, we think, yes, life is good. And when we have distress or grief or bodily pain, we think life is bad. And we tend to think that whatever situation we're in is going to last forever. But to remember, this is not me. This body is not me, and this mind is not me. It's not me. It's simply a machine. It has nothing to do with me. This desire and lamentation, sochati kanchati, I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that. And when we don't get it, we lament. When we get it and it's not what we wanted, we lament. When we have something perfect and we lose it, we lament. So to be free from this, I want and I've lost. I want and I've lost. Right? People who want to get married, they never find a spouse. They get to be 35, 40, 45, 50, and they never find. I know somebody who's like 42, always wanted to marry, never found the spouse he wanted. Or a person who marries, and then, oh, my wife isn't what I expected. My husband isn't what I expected. They've disappointed me. Or you have the perfect marriage, and then your spouse dies. Or something changes. I have a friend who felt she had the perfect marriage for 10 years, and then things changed. So this desire, lamentation, one becomes free from this by understanding that everything we need is coming from Krishna. Krishna is complete. I do not need anyone or anything or any situation in this world to make me complete. I already have everything that I need. Then auspicious, inauspicious. This is where we're thinking, well, I can only do my bhakti when things are auspicious. I can't do my bhakti when things are inauspicious. No, one can do bhakti anywhere. Hoitu kiya pratiyata. People who say, well, once I can give up my household life and then I can just chant all day, or I can just go to the holy places and live there. But right now I can't do my... No, one can think of Krishna anywhere. Krishna is everywhere. He's in the sun. He's in the moon. He's in the air. He's our ability. We're not to not be dependent on auspicious or inauspicious things. And then this honor, dishonor, fame, and infamy. So Krishna said earlier, for one who's been honored, dishonor is worse than death. We're reading now in Bhagavatam about how Arjuna dishonored Asvatthama, which was considered equal to killing him. So there are many times that people, when they get dishonored, they commit suicide. Because they feel, if people don't honor me. But then we look at, there are great saints in the Bhagavatam who intentionally put themselves in a position of dishonor and infamy. Rishabhdev, Maharaj Yudhisthira at the end of his life, Jed Bharat, people who behaved to the external world like crazy people, like madmen. And everyone was dishonoring them. And that was part of their practice of yoga. St. Francis of Assisi talks like that. He says, my greatest pleasure is when people dishonor me. Now, obviously, as preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement, it's important for our service to not only be good, but to look good, that we shouldn't put ourselves into a compromising position. Just like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very angry at Junior Haridas for an appearance of impropriety. So we shouldn't even have an appearance of impropriety. However, if despite all of our endeavors to be honorable, if Krishna arranges that we become dishonored, if Krishna, then we go on with our service. this fame and infamy, it's so teetering. You know, just at any moment, fame can turn to infamy. And just, it's a temporary thing. It's based on the body. You know, it's interesting that the demons can be motivated by, so much by this fame. Like Krishna told Jarasandha, if you fight with us, you'll be famous after death. And you think, you know, what does it matter? I mean, let's say in some previous life, we were very famous. And maybe we can even today go to some part of the world where our statue of us in a previous life is in some public place and everyone is honoring us. We don't even care. It's like, oh, that's interesting. Who cares? Hey, if you could be told, you know, you open the history book, oh, in my last life I was some famous person, what would it matter? You know, so what do we care? that we're remembered. We go on and do something else. Actually, better for most of us to be dishonored and to have infamy and to remember that we're a very humble servant of the Lord. So this detachment above duality is a question of being equipoised. Baladeva Vijayabhushan says, he does not rejoice at gaining dear things. He does not show hatred upon attaining what is disagreeable. He does not lament on the destruction of what is dear to him. He does not hanker for what he does not have. He has given up both pious actions and sinful actions because they are both causes of bondage. So the only way that one can not rejoice and not lament, the only way that one can do this is to meditate on the fact that I am always connected with Krishna and therefore I am always complete and I always have everything I need for the prosecution of my Krishna consciousness. Always. There is no person, there is no circumstance that can separate me from Krishna. I am the soul. There is simply no other way to be above this rejoicing and happiness and lamentation. It isn't possible just on the material platform. Now, it's interesting to hear that Baladeva Vijayabhushan, in explaining this detachment from auspicious and inauspicious things, says he gives up both pious actions and sinful actions. So not only does the devotee not engage in sinful actions, but the devotee also does not engage in pious actions. Now, what does that mean? Of course, the devotee's life appears to be pious. But the devotee is not engaged in pious actions in order to be happy in the world or in order to be respected in the world. Whatever pious actions a devotee does is simply because that's part of the Shastra and it's pleasing to Krishna. But if those pious actions interfere with bhakti, the devotee will give them up as well. This is just like, in order for me to take up Krishna consciousness, I had to disobey my mother. My mother didn't want me to join the Hare Krishna movement. So obeying one's mother is a pious action. Krishna says later on in the Bhagavad Gita that austerity and the mode of goodness is to worship superiors like the father and mother. But I disobeyed my mother. My father was supportive, but my mother was not. So a devotee is generally pious, but they're not attached to pious activities. And Raghunath Das Goswami explains this in his Manashiksha, where he says, oh, my dear mind, please do not perform the religious activities described in the Vedas or the sinful activities also designated in the scriptures. O mind, engage yourself fully in serving Sri Sri Radha and Krishna with love and devotion. Okay, that was the D, the detachment above duality. Now we're going to look at the E, endeavor and focus. So under this, Krishna says that we make Krishna the supreme goal of life. Of course, this was explained earlier under Krishna Karmadi, that one doesn't have a goal of going to heaven or being happy in this world. One has the goal of Krishna and have determination to serve Krishna. Just like we take vows at initiation, I'm going to chant 16 rounds every day. And that's 16 rounds every day. It's not one day 6 rounds, one day 8 rounds, one day 12 rounds, one day 25 rounds. It's at least 16 rounds every day. It can always be more than that. But that's the determination. I'm going to do this every day. You know, unless we're in a coma in the hospital with a tube down our throat or something like that. And if there's some emergency and we can't finish, then we make that up the next day. To have that determination, I'm going to be Krishna conscious. I'm going to do this. Or if one's worshiping deities, then one worships them every day without fail. Just like if one has a child, one takes care of the child every day. We take care of our body every day. Self-control, not having to be controlled by some external force. Expert. To be expert in our service. It's interesting that Krishna gives this as one of the qualities of peace. It's also one of the qualities of a devotee. Prabhupada said that the training in the Gurukul, the training for the brahmacharis, should be to learn something of everything and everything of something. That the devotee should be a generalist and also a specialist. So a devotee should know something of everything and everything of something. We shouldn't be fools. And whatever is our main service, we should become expert in that. At, on a material level also. Prabhupada says that surrender to Krishna means whatever I'm doing with great attention to every detail. That's love. That's love. That's how we develop love. Right? Krishna is the proprietor. If I'm thinking Krishna is the proprietor, then I'm going to want to do things very expertly. I'm going to want to do things in a way that will be very pleasing to him. I'm not just going to want to throw things together. And pure. So a devotee leads a pure life. This is no illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling. Right? It wanted to be free from the vices of the Kali Yuga. Not looking for a material result. So we have to be looking for a result, but the result that we should be looking for is Krishna pleased. Is Krishna pleased? Is Krishna pleased? And, you know, Krishna doesn't need the material result in order to be pleased. Just like Vidura was so absorbed in Krishna that by mistake he was offering Krishna the banana peels instead of the bananas. But Krishna was very pleased with that. So it's interesting that one should be expert, but yet not looking for a material result. So one should be an expert cook, but even if despite one's being an expert cook, everything is spoiled. Still, if the mood was to please Krishna, then Krishna is pleased. And that can be done, we talked about this many times before, at every moment. That can be done at every moment. It's not that Krishna is pleased just when the offering's made. Krishna is pleased at every moment while one's cooking in the kitchen. Without cares. Without worrying about this or that, worrying about money, worrying about education, worrying about family, worrying about health. And fixed on Krishna. I'm going to do this to please Krishna. Krishna's the boss. So that's in the endeavor and focus category. Now we're going to go to the attitude of a servant of God. The attitude of a servant of God. That Krishna is the owner and Krishna is the doer. In these verses, Krishna said he does not think himself a proprietor. Baladeva Vidyabhushan says, devoid of the illusions arising from possessing a house. So one thinks, I'm the owner of this house. I'm the owner of this car. I'm the owner of this computer. I'm the owner of these clothes. Right? But no, Krishna's the owner. That's why we have an altar in our house. Krishna's the owner. He owns everything. He's the boss. We talked about this earlier. Krishna is the boss. He is the owner. This house belongs to him. This car belongs to him. I just work for him. Just like when you work for a company, the company may supply you with a car. My son worked for a company where the company supplied him with a car, with a computer. And when he stopped working for the company, then he had to give all that back. So we're working for Krishna's company, as we discussed the other day, and our product is love of God. We work for Krishna's company. And Krishna's supplying us with the house, and Krishna's supplying us with the car, with whatever money we have, with whatever clothes we have, with our body. And then Krishna says, free from false ego. So of course in Bhagavad Gita 3:27, kartaham iti manyate, ahankara vimudhatma, kartaham iti manyate. Where Krishna says, the spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. So one who's peaceful, they don't have this false ego that I'm the doer, where I'm the desirer, but I'm not the doer. Also, you know, it's really interesting how much time and energy a conditioned soul spends to defend their false ego. But the only way we're going to get peaceful is to be free from false ego. It's really interesting. If you examine most of the time that people argue, most of the tension in human relationships, you'll find that people are terrified. It goes back to this being afraid of dishonor and infamy, a fear of losing love, you know. That if people were to see that I'm just a fallible being, that they won't love me anymore, you know, they won't take care of me anymore, they won't respect me anymore. But this, all this false ego, you know, I'm perfect, powerful, and happy, I'm so intelligent, I'm so this, I'm so that, that if you're really peaceful, you let go of it. So interesting. You know, we put all this energy into defending ourselves. Hey, did you leave the milk out so it spoiled? Well, I didn't leave it out. Someone else left it out. I left it out because you said you were going to use it later. It's not my fault. I'm perfect, powerful, and happy. It's all somebody else's fault. That's all false ego. And it fills us with fear. If we're free from false ego, hey, you left the milk out and it spoiled. And you go, yeah, sorry. I'm just a fool. And you know what? You're peaceful. Now, sometimes one can't act externally like that in the world. Chanakya Pandit says when you're dealing with cheaters, you may also have to be a cheater to fight fire with fire. But generally, one doesn't need to externally to defend their false ego. Let the false ego go. Let this pride that I'm wonderful and I'm perfect and everybody has to honor me and respect me or I'm not going to feel loved and safe, and let it go. Just let it go. Whenever we're blamed or criticized for something, rightly or wrongly, even if we're criticized wrongly, what are we defending? We're defending our false ego that I'm so great. Let it go. We're trying to get rid of this false ego anyway. And if one practices that, one becomes peaceful. Also, this attitude of a servant is not just that Krishna is the proprietor and Krishna is the doer, but also that everything that Krishna does is good. Therefore, Krishna says to be tolerant and always satisfied. And Prabhupada, in commenting on this, said we should be happy and satisfied with whatever comes by the grace of the Supreme Lord in terms of food, money, and residence. So whatever food we get, sometimes we're going to get very palatable food. Sometimes we're going to get very simple food. Sometimes we're going to get so much food that we can't possibly eat it at the farm in Hungary, the new Vrajdham farm in Hungary, on Govardhan Puja. They offer 2,000 kilos. 2,000 kilo. Well, kilo is 2.2 pounds. 2,000 kilos of sweets to Govardhan, and the head of the community, Shivaram Swami, he says generally when we make an offering to Krishna, we just put a little bit on the plate, right? We keep the big stock in the kitchen, we put a little bit on the plate, and understand that Krishna's eaten everything. And, of course, for a lot of the offerings, we just put this little bit on the plate. But he said, for this festival, we're going to be offering Krishna more than we can eat. So we offer this amazing sweets. One third of the temple room is full of sweets, and they put the Govardhan Shila on a boat made of flowers going through this ocean of sweets that's in one third of the temple room. And then it's just not possible to eat all of those sweets. You know, they distribute it to all the people in the village and so forth. But, you know, even like a month later, you're still eating those sweets. So sometimes we get more food than we can possibly eat. And sometimes we don't get enough. And money. You know, sometimes we get as much money as we want. They say that everybody always wants 10% more than what they have, no matter how much money you get. Right? Or they say people who win the lottery or suddenly get a big inheritance, that usually they, no matter how much it is, you know, $300 million, and they've often just burned through it in a year. You know, recently someone told me, oh yeah, I got an inheritance of $120,000 and I lost it all in 2 days. I'm like, that's awful. So, you know, we may get more money than we can possibly spend. And we may not get enough. We may have barely enough money to pay our bills. And residents, sometimes we may have a very wonderful palatial place. Sometimes when I travel, I stay in a temple where the guest room has, no kidding, gold-plated bathroom fixtures. You know, the toilet flusher is plated with 24-karat gold, no joke. You know, and sometimes I'm in a place without even it being clean. You know, where there's giant cockroaches crawling on the altar and the bathroom smells like urine. And you know, you may be in one residence. You may be in a residence where everyone has their own room with a comfortable bed and an ensuite bath and, you know, overlooking the ocean. And you may be in a place where you have to share a room with 12 people and a bathroom with 30 people. And the only thing out your window is a alleyway with some old person clearing their throat and spitting out mucus. So food, money, residence. Whatever Krishna does is good. Whatever Krishna's provided for me, he's the boss. He's the proprietor. I work for his business. And in working for his business, he may sometimes put me in a residence I really like. He may sometimes put me in one I don't really like. He may sometimes give me more money than I know what to do with, and sometimes give me barely enough to survive. He may sometimes give me large amounts of palatable food, or sometimes give me small amounts of unpalatable food, or any kind of mixture of those. But he is always my worshipful Lord. And I'm always tolerant. Right? This is the mood of the devotee. To be always tolerant and satisfied with anything. So now the fourth category, relationship interaction. To deal with others with love, with mercy, with respect, and with freedom. With love, with mercy, with respect, and with freedom. So to love one's enemies, Krishna says to be equal towards friends and enemies. Adveshta means, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, that a person does not have hatred even for those who hate oneself. Rather, one has friendliness toward them, maitraha. One is merciful to them, thinking that they should not end up in unfortunate circumstances, karunaha. And there are many places in the Bhagavatam, particularly, especially in the teachings of Lord Kapila Dev, where it says that if one is not merciful to all living entities, one cannot possibly attain to self-realization and to bhakti. Now, my dear friends, this does not just mean that we're vegetarian. I mean, you'd have to also be vegetarian, but that's not the limit of it. It doesn't mean just that we don't step on bugs. You know, it means that even if someone wants to hurt us, even if there is somebody who hates us and envies us and wants to destroy us, who is spreading lies about us, who is stealing our possessions, who is destroying our relationships with others, who's harming us in some way, that our mood is, may they be happy, may they be happy, may they be happy. It's essential. Lord Jesus says, if you only love your friends, how are you better than demons? Even demons love their friends. Even Nazi war criminals and mafioso are kind to their own children. What is that? You know, even the very violent creature, the scorpion mouse, I mean, it may sound really funny, but they're very violent creatures. And they will kill their own kind, but they're very, very affectionate to their children. So to just love those who do good for you, what is that? Was you just a merchant? But to practice wishing good for one's enemies. Prabhupada said, this person is acting as my enemy due to my own past misdeeds, so it's better to suffer than to protest. To realize that nobody can do any harm for me, that's not my own destiny. Really, no one can do any harm for me or any good for me other than what's my own destiny. Why should I blame the instrument of my karma? Then non-possessiveness of children and wife, nirmamaha, by not thinking of the body as the self, nirahankara, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, my friends, wife, sons, and daughters are now your servants and maidservants. Whatever care I take for them is only as they are related to you. So instead of thinking, as most people do, this is my husband, and this husband is an object of my enjoyment. This man has to treat me in this way and that way, and not treat me in this way and that way, so I will enjoy. These children are for my enjoyment. These parents are for my enjoyment. This wife is for my enjoyment. Then we're thinking then as family members are almost like things, isn't it? You know, here's my shoes. Here's my phone, you know. It's for me to enjoy. It's supposed to do what I want it to do. But if we want to come to peace, if we want to be dear to Krishna, we see these family members are servants of Krishna. Jivaraswarapaya Krishnara Nityadasa. You may say, well, my family members, there aren't practicing devotees. Doesn't matter. Jivaraswarapaya Krishnara Nityadasa. All living entities are ultimately servants of Krishna. And Krishna, our proprietor, our boss, has said to us, this is the jiva I want you to take care of right now, in this life, at this time. So we take care of them to make Krishna happy, not because they're going to do something for ourselves. Oh, and this seems so hard, huh? Krishna says, he by whom no one is put into difficulty. And Prabhupada, in his purport, says, no one is put into difficulty, anxiety, fearfulness, or dissatisfaction by such a devotee. Since a devotee is kind to everyone, he does not act in such a way as to put others into anxiety. If we want to attain peace and if we want to become dear to Krishna, we need to practice that I don't cause difficulty for anyone. Now, we should say if one's a teacher or a parent or an employer, one has to correct one's subordinates. One has to train one's subordinates, which may indeed give them some anxiety. But we are always everyone's well-wisher, is the point. That we never intentionally do something other than good to others. Our only actions, all of our speech and all of our actions, should be only what will benefit others. You can see how interrelated these qualities are. You know, if I'm thinking that I need to get something from somebody, if they don't give it to me, then I'm not going to be happy, then I may try to put them into anxiety as a way to force them to do what I want them to do. Isn't it like that? Right? Well, I'm not going to do this for you. Then we can't advance in bhakti. Who is not disturbed by anyone, Krishna says, and Prabhupada, purporting this, says if others try to put a devotee into anxiety, he is not disturbed, because a devotee is always engrossed in Krishna consciousness and engaged in devotional circumstances. Such material circumstances cannot move him. Generally, when a materialistic person is expecting some retaliation from an enemy, he's in a state of fear. So we have to expect that other people with whom we interact, even other people on the path of bhakti, may not yet be at this point. They may still think that we are going to fulfill their desires, and when we don't fulfill their desires, they may try to put us into anxiety. They may try to harm us. And then we just think, this person doesn't understand that Krishna is the source of everything they need, not me. I'm not the source of fulfilling their desires. This unfortunate person is thinking that I'm Krishna, but I'm not. And just have compassion for them and not become fearful. Because when someone thinks that I'm the source of the fulfillment of their needs, then if I don't fulfill their needs, and I can't fulfill their needs all the time because I'm not Krishna, then they may try to hurt me in some way. They may try to make me feel guilty or you know, insult me in some way. You think, what can anybody do to me? Krishna is fulfilling all my needs. Let this person come to real Krishna consciousness. There's nothing to be afraid of. Now Krishna said, without cares. And Prabhupada says, to be without cares means that a devotee never takes the part of a particular party. Therefore, he is carefree. Baladev Vijayabhushan translates this neutral, udashinaha, as not taking sides. Not thinking, you know, okay, I've got to be the Republican Party or the Democratic Party or this or that or the other. And one may be a member of some group, but one's not identifying with that group, not like some sort of a cricket match or a football match or something like that. You know, my group against your group. My side has to win. So these qualities at the end of the chapter in 1220, Krishna uses this word, dharmamritam. So mritam means death. Amritam means without death, with life. Amrita also means nectar. The demigods drink nectar to prolong their life. Dharma, what does dharma mean? Dharma means one's duties. The path of religion also means one's intrinsic nature. So Baladev Vijayabhushan defines dharmamritam is of the nectarian path endowed with good qualities. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says the nectar of these qualities. So a lot of these qualities may sound very, very difficult. They may sound almost impossible. They may sound even unattractive. Oh, I can't defend my false ego anymore. I have to wish well to my enemies. If other people criticize me, I just tolerate. But if one practices these, one's life becomes filled with nectar. One surpasses death. One gets a sense that I don't die. I'm a soul. And the most important thing is not just that one's life is filled with nectar and freedom and peace, but that Krishna becomes very, very pleased. Krishna becomes very pleased. He says, yes, this is really my devotee. Bhakti is not just some sentimental thing of, oh, I love Krishna. But bhakti is developing these qualities of peace, by which one becomes dear to Krishna. Krishna keeps saying, very dear to Krishna. So detachment above duality, endeavor and focus, an attitude of a servant, and relationships where we give other people mercy and trust and respect. Detachment above duality, endeavor and focus, attitude of a servant of God, and relationship interaction that's full of respect and mercy. Now, why is Krishna so pleased with these qualities? Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, since these qualities arise from sense control, which in turn arises from bhakti, they're not material qualities. Krishna is pleased by bhakti, not by good material qualities. So these qualities are naturally part of loving Krishna. They're naturally part of loving Krishna. And therefore they give Krishna such happiness. Baladev Vijayabhushan says that Krishna is controlled by the persons devoted to him alone and by the persons devoted solely to the process of bhakti dedicated to him. The most beautiful Krishna is conquered completely by love. So interesting that Krishna becomes controlled not only by persons devoted to him, but persons who are devoted to unmixed bhakti. Persons who don't think that I have to do bhakti and something else, but just bhakti. So, thank you very much. we can take some questions, comments.
Well, let's see, I need a few people here. Go ahead, Prabhu.
This is Madhukanta Das. In text 14, in the word for word, it's santushta satyakam, and it's translated santushta is satisfied, and then satyakam is translated as satisfied. But usually satyakam is always. Is that just a mistake?
Let me look this up. That's in 14. Okay. In my Bhagavad Gita, it says always, so it could be that in an earlier edition, it wasn't done properly.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else?
Brother Irma, it seems almost like a mystic power to be able to really, from your heart, wish for someone who's you're describing as someone who's your enemy that's just trying to destroy your life, perhaps even standing in the way of your devotional service to Krishna, to really wish, as you were saying, may they be happy and be compassionate towards them. It seems almost impossible. How do we get there?
Practice, practice, practice. So as soon as somebody's doing something to try to harm you, you just say, may you be happy, may you be happy, may you be happy. Say it in your mind if necessary. Just practice. May you be happy. Now, in order to do that, we have a whole seminar on forgiveness, and we go through various steps of doing this. In order to do this, you've got to be thinking, Krishna is meeting all of my needs perfectly. Because otherwise, a person who's attacking us will put us in a state of fear, and in a state of fear, good qualities will go away. You cannot have good qualities in a state of fear. You'll jettison them. Out of fear, we attack. So the only way not to have fear is Krishna is taking care of me. Krishna is giving me everything I need. Krishna is giving me everything I need. Krishna is giving me everything I need. Whatever Krishna does is perfect. This person does not have any power to harm me at all, unless Krishna wants them to harm me. And if Krishna wants them to harm me, then that so-called harm is actually good for me. And this unfortunate person is thinking that by harming others, namely me, they're going to be happy. What an unfortunate person. May they come to happiness. Now, even if you're totally selfish, you'd want them to come to happiness, because if they come to happiness and good fortune, they won't want to hurt you anymore. That's your best means of protecting yourself. So even if you're a materialistic rascal, how are you going to get people to stop hurting you? If they're feeling full happiness and peace and satisfaction, why would they hurt you? They wouldn't. May this person come to full Krishna consciousness so that they no longer have any desire to harm anyone else. That's the only way a person's going to give up their desire to harm others, not by being harmed themselves. You know, if you take the person who's harmed...
on the property. It seemed like Prabhupada got really, really disturbed with him.
Yeah, but Prabhupada was always his well-wisher. Prabhupada always wished the best for him. I mean, sometimes the best for somebody is that they leave that body. Therefore, Prabhupada says, like, the murderer should be killed by the government, because the government is a representative of God. When they execute a murderer, then that murderer has already gotten their reaction. And having already gotten their reaction, they don't have to suffer after death. They don't have to go to hell. They don't have to take a low body. So occasionally, it may be the fact that what's good for somebody what's beneficial for somebody may be to undergo some sort of difficulty. But we're not wanting them to undergo difficulty. We want them to have what's good for them. It's with regret. I was just reading this again, how Krishna was sorry when Duryodhan was dying on the battlefield with his thighs broken. He was sad. He's not gloating. Aha! Duryodhan got his comeuppance. And as Balaram, he's the guru of Duryodhan, the well-wisher of Duryodhan. So Krishna is very, very sad and sorry that those who choose evil have to go through punishment, etc., in order to be rectified. That's not his preference. Like a good parent never wants to punish their children. Prabhupada was always Mr. Nair's well-wisher. If at any time Mr. Nair had come and said, "Oh, Prabhupada, I'm so sorry, I now surrender," Prabhupada would have been so happy. Just like Lord Ramchandra said when Vibhishan surrendered. He said, "Anyone who surrenders, I will accept them." He said, "If Ravana surrenders, I will accept them." So that's always the mood of the devotee and of Krishna. Anybody else?
Anyone else have something?
Hare Krishna.
Go ahead, we can hear you.
Okay, thank you very much for the nice class. This is regarding the slide in which you showed money, home, and one thing more. There is a saying that food does not come on its own accord, even to lion's mouth, he has to make endeavor. So suppose if I lose my job, or maybe I'm not getting money or something like that, I may not blame God because he is perfect, but I may say to myself, okay, I may endeavor, and it's in my reach because God will favor me, so I will do little more endeavor and try to accumulate more wealth or more better home. What's your say on that?
Well, the answer to this question depends to some extent on what ashram we are in. So if one is in the grihastha ashram, then part of one's service to Krishna is to take care of these jivas that are under your care. And one is supposed to make some effort to earn a livelihood and to have a house and so forth. And that effort has to be according then to one's varna. So the effort one makes as a brahmana is different from the effort one makes as a kshatriya, etc. So one is supposed to be making some effort like that, but not at the expense of one's bhakti. Like Prabhupada says, generally speaking, one should not work more than 8 hours a day. And generally speaking, one should take an occupation that's an honest occupation. Now, in an emergency, one can do something out of one's varna. So in an emergency, one can do the activities of another varna for a brief period of time. And there may be some emergency situation where one has to work more and so forth, but should never be at the expense of one's bhakti. And then whatever comes, comes. If by honest labor, 8 hours a day, the best that Krishna arranges for me is, you know, something that's not very nice, then one should be tolerant. That's the result is not in our hands, and nor are we should we be working for a result. We should be working to please Krishna. I'm doing this job, I'm earning this money, I'm trying to get a nice house, because that's my duty to Krishna. And whatever comes, I take it as Krishna giving, and I'm tolerant and satisfied with that. Now, if one's in one of the renounced orders, then it's quite different. So if one's in the brahmachari ashram, then one doesn't have any money at all, and one is only eats when the guru calls. One doesn't make a, one will not eat unless one's personally called, and one lives in the home of the guru, and one is simply working as a menial servant of the guru. In the vanaprastha ashram, one is living in the forest, or one is traveling from one holy place to another, and staying in whatever facility is arranged at the holy place. And one is not making an effort to earn money. One, of course, may have some money, some savings from some retirement, but one is no longer working at a job. The Vedic Vanaprastha is eating whatever food is easily found in the forest and so forth. And in the sannyas ashram, one either has no residence and is just traveling, or one is provided, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was provided with that little room, the Gambira. One may be provided with some room in someone else's house or so forth. One certainly is not earning any money. If there's any, you know, just like the brahmachari turns over any collections to their guru, the vanaprastha and the sannyasi, if someone gives them some money, they use that for the service of the Lord, for the preaching mission themselves. They live very simply. In the sannyas ashram, they may beg for food. There's different, the family may bring food outside the village, or they may beg for food from door to door, or like Madhavendrapuri, they may not even ask anybody for food, and whatever food just comes to them of their own accord. So the specific details of how to live depend on one's ashram and one's varna. But the principle is the same. The principle is, I do my duty. That was one of the categories, was endeavor and focus. I do my duty, and whatever maintenance comes by the grace of God, I am tolerant and satisfied with that. It may be wonderful, it may be not wonderful, but I'm tolerant and satisfied. But I do my duty. Now, there is a type of dharma for a renunciate. Like we said, Madhavendrapuri made no effort for his food at all. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as a sannyasi, did beg. So there is a type of yoga, jada yoga, where one just stays in one place and whatever facilities come to that person, they accept. So this is not a general practice. It's not prescribed for everyone. It's not some sort of a requirement to live like that. Generally speaking, even in the sannyas ashram, vanaprastha ashram, there is some effort made to get basic necessities of life. But whatever comes, comes. You know, you may go begging and get nothing, like the cowherd boys went begging to the brahmanas, and they got nothing. Krishna says that is the way of begging. Okay, I think we could take one more question. That's it.
All right, well, I'll give this to Mother Anu. Mother Anu, go ahead. You can ask your question. Go ahead, Mataji. Mother Anu? Oh, whew. Okay, she's asking me to give the question, but I hope you'll understand this. Let's see. Felt sometimes that when the earnings point of time comes, our mind gets small happiness. Do you understand that?
No.
I'm sorry, Mother Anu. I don't understand that.